Hello, I'm Connie Rotella, and welcome to our Triple Threat podcast. I'm super excited to begin this journey with all of you. Are you ready to put your best foot forward and show up with confidence? This tool is here to help you evolve into the artist you are meant to be. Just always remember to believe, become, and be ready. Add a new skill set or refine what you already know. So here we go. My next guest is Nathalie Bonnet. She's a composer and violinist from Montreal, now based in Los Angeles. I'm going to be discovering quite an amazing, impressive talent that we have from here that is doing amazing things all over the world. And this is when I get excited, because we don't know about these things until we hear about them. And then we hear their story. And then it gives a chance to the next generation to believe that a dream can come true. So Nathalie's joining us today from her home in LA, right? Is that where you're at, Nathalie?
Yeah, I'm in Burbank right now. Yes. Happy to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Great. Well, for sure. Because I mean, we see things happening on social media. And last week, it really moved me by someone commenting on how we should speak about our Quebecois artists making it international. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree. Do you feel in any way that you have like two lives, like you're living one here and you're living one outside of Montreal?
I have a dual citizenship, and that kind of gave me that sort of dual life in many ways. And I have had the chance because of that, of exploring and playing with so many people and touring. And, you know, so I do feel like they are two separate lives, but I do like to combine them. So a lot of times when I have a project, you know, here in LA, I'm going to hire musicians in Montreal, do sessions in Montreal, combine talents in Montreal with talents here. And just, I find that these are my two worlds. So I just love doing that.
I love to hear that. So you combine always a Montreal talent in your work. You've actually scored for numerous movies, television series on Netflix. And you also performed and recorded with Stevie Wonder, Luciano Pavarotti, Chance the Rapper, the list goes on. Gino Vannelli. There's so many people you worked with. And I'm looking at you going, when did you start this career? Because you've done so much in this bio, just all the nominations you received. Let's go back to how did this all started?
It started when I was four. And so my mom brought me to this concert of young violinists. And I was just curious about it. And I felt like I wanted to be part of the group and play. So I just asked her, I said, you know, this was great. I would just, you know, I want to be part of this. So I started, and I was studying at that school with other kids for like 5 years, you know, from 4 to 9. And then I went to private teachers, you know, I guess they saw I had talent and I was interested and I loved it. So private teaching, and then started competitions, more in classical music, doing, you know, national competitions. And that led to, actually, when I was 11, my parents took a sabbatical and they decided to go to New York. So I ended up traveling with them. My mom, I was an only child, so she decided to homeschool me during that time. And that was extended to almost 4 years. So I was in New York from 11 to 14. And that, I think, was where I got, you know, really the core of my violin education, my music education. That's where, you know, I was playing in the New York Youth Symphony. We were playing in Carnegie Hall, you know, every 3 months. It was just surreal. And I had teachers from Manhattan School and Juilliard. So that's where I went from student to almost professional, I would say. You know, it was kind of like my teenage years as an artist. Started doing competitions there. Also played soloist with the Long Island Festival Orchestra when I was 14. And yeah, so I feel like that was the game changer for me. My parents had to come back to Montreal though. So came back to Montreal, that started a whole new chapter. So having, you know, teachers from McGill Conservatory, going to school in Montreal, all that thing, adaptation a lot. And I started doing pop gigs when I was 14. I did La Petite Suite Québécoise, which was really cool. And I was like, oh, this fun too, you know, there's Mozart and Beethoven, but and then we played Queen, you know, in like churches and stuff, and I was like, oh, I can do that too with my violin. So this kind of started to open up different possibilities. One of my first tours was with actually Ricardo Cocciante, Richard Cocciante, So while I was subbing, I was 17 and I was subbing at the Metropolitan Orchestra with I think it was Agnes Grossman, who was conductor at the time. And so I met a bunch of people, and they asked me if I was interested in touring with Richard Cochian. So we did a local tour that led to a tour in Paris. So ended up doing the Olympia for, I can't remember if it was 4 or 6 nights. There was a crazy, you know, full week of shows at the Olympia. I was still very young. After that, I really started thinking I should explore this more. And, you know, I love classical music, but I really thought that there was a lot of other things I could do with my violin and be involved in. So when I came back, I started doing more sessions, more, you know, recording sessions for different albums. And I wasn't composing at the time. I was just, you know, being a player, but just wanting to play in all styles.
Yeah.
And I got interested in improvisation. So actually started getting grants to go to Banff, you know, jazz workshop, study with people from Berklee College of Music in jazz and improvisation, going to New York with private teachers. So the Canada and Quebec Arts Council were blessings, because they really helped me evolve in those directions.
Wow.
And yeah, and it was kind of funny, because it's a career where I kept being kind of inspired by different events or possibilities, and wanting to go and dive in and see where I could go, you know, what I could do with these new artists I was playing with. After a while, actually in my 20s, I went like a little detour to med school. So I got interested in med school, did my pre-med, which I decided not to follow through, but it was interesting because it gave me perspective on music as well in a different way. So when I came back to music, I was like, okay, I am choosing music. I remember, I think I was 24 at the time, and I was like, okay, what do I really want to do? Because it felt like before doing my pre-med studies, music was not imposed, but it was kind of a collective dream of people around me and my dream, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do with it. So this was my first clear choice. I am choosing music for this reason. Where do I want to go with this? And first thing I did was start playing in a fusion jazz trio. I had never done jazz before in this way. And I was like trying to figure out what the chords were. And I was like, I did not see the 11, you know, chord tone when I was studying at McGill.
You said you studied at
McGill. I studied at McGill. I did my bachelor's degree at McGill in classical, you know, violin performance. So I graduated when I was 21. And that's when I was, you know, going kind of right and left, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I was playing in orchestras. And that's when I also did that tour with Richard Cochian and all those experiences. So anyway, fast forward to doing a bunch of all of these things, starting a festival in Montreal, because I wanted to bring these people I was studying with to Montreal, so when I was 28, I was like, well, that doesn't exist. Nobody kind of knows that as a violinist, we can do other stuff like this, improvise and, you know, get outside of the written paper, the written sheet, right? So I actually organized, that was a crazy, you know, idea, but why not? I organized this festival, brought in like, I think 6 coaches from New York, Boston, even somebody from LA, Joe DiOrio came, gave master classes, had 10 concerts at L'Air du Temps back then. It was the 20th anniversary of this great jazz club in Montreal that I used to go to and I loved. And so they gave me 2 weekends during their festivities to put together my program of strings, basically strings doing anything else but classical. So, you know, Michel Donato played, and you know, a bunch of people played from Montreal, and the guests that I had giving masterclasses played as well. So this kept on for 3 years, did this festival. The next year it kind of grew way too big, but like, oh my goodness. Now we had concerts with Mark O'Connor and Core Tango, and, you know, a lot of other bands. I remember the last show I did for that festival was Joran, right before she became kind of a Quebec sensation. She wasn't really discovered at the time. So those were the last 2 shows I produced for that festival at the Corona. By the time I was 30, I had done 3 years of leading, founding a festival, which really crazy. But by then, I also had a kid with a baby, and I was like, this is too much for me. So lush the festival. I'm like, I'm not doing this. So I kept my career going and did, you know, my 30s were mainly jazz. I went to New York, was part of Ted Nash and Odeon, which is a jazz quintet. And that led to recording with them. It led to touring in California, Brazil. And it was a whole new world. I was really diving into this jazz world and a lot of studying, because jazz is hard, you know. It's a hard style. Coming from classical on a string instrument, it was really something difficult. So I felt it was like a really experiment for me, and felt a calling. I was on tour with Garou, and I felt like, why don't I start arranging or orchestrating, or, you know, maybe composing for real? And on tour, I had so much time, you know, buses, travels, planes. So I saw this ad of Berklee online classes, and I was like, this is perfect, because I'm on tour. I can't go to class, but I can do this online. Wiggle it around my travel stuff. So I started doing one class. I totally loved it. And it was great because it was arranging for a band, for, you know, pop band. And I had the whole Yahoo pop band around me. So if I had a question for the bass, I was like, go to the bass player.
Oh, that's amazing.
it was great. So I started like that, and then orchestration, and then started doing things for, you know, courses on how to compose for media. And I started pitching. So my first composition gig that I pitched for was actually a show that is still running. I think they're up to their 13th or 14th season or something like that. Prière de ne pas envoyer de fleurs was my first main theme. And it was crazy because, you know, I was still, I think I was maybe a year and a half in my courses, and I barely had any samples. I just had Logic, and it was still very new, but I wanted to get this gig so bad. And the cool thing is, we were just handing in like CDs and a number. So they didn't know who it was. So it was great because it was fair. Like, they didn't know. So if I can convince them on anonymously, it was a chance. So I remember I ordered this 2 weeks cloud access to a bunch of samples and spent a full weekend, no sleep, to do my demo and my pitch to this show. And I remember waiting impatiently. And when I found out that I actually won the pitch, it was the day before those samples were going back to, like, you know, turn to pumpkin. So that first contract basically paid for my first professional sample libraries, and it's still playing today. So it's very symbolic.
That is so amazing. I did not know this. I read it, and discovering you is just such a pleasure because, you know, it's like you're a hidden gem. What inspired me when I was watching you perform, it's your style, your personality. You're just unique in your own way. And you also bring that Montreal flavor, because that's what we are here. I find there's a lot of love in the way we do what we do. And then you bring it there, and it's like at another level, but it's still, I still feel in you that Montreal gal, you know, like.
Yeah.
You know, the foundation is here. It's just that the opportunity and the doors open there. Yeah. But at the same time, we still hear what you've composed and orchestrated here. Mm-hmm. So literally you're living the best worlds in two worlds. And it's like, who does that? And
I'm trying to do that, you know, splitting myself in two kind of thing, you know. With technology, who knows? Maybe I'll be a hologram somewhere while I compose it somewhere else.
Why not? You know? The ambition you had to do that jazz festival for 3 years, you were mentioning, like, that's huge. And, you know, the fact that you organized that, was the reception here acknowledged?
Well, I think people were happy because it was new and it was something different. And it, especially, you know, the strings community, I mean, the workshops and everything were sold out because they didn't have any programs here for improvisation and jazz for string players. That wasn't happening yet. That was really coming from US, and, you know, you had to go to France or US basically to study jazz in spring, you know, or have a private teachers. And I think they maybe had one or two students, but it's very rare. So this was, you know, new. I remember on the second year of that festival, André Ménard came to the shows, you know, and I was like, okay, so he's coming to my shows. And I was like, wow, just that meant so much to me, because if he thought that it was worth his time to come and see what the festival was about, I thought it was an honor to see him there. And it's funny because I actually saw him, I think it was Hubs Montreal, and he was there because he's part of, I think, the executive board or something like that. And we talked about it, and, you know, we chatted for at least half an hour. And I told him that. I said, you know, that was quite an honor to see you back then. And thanks for being that person that wants to give back, because that's essentially what he's done. He's doing right now, like, kind of retired, you know, and he's done so much already. But he said, yeah, I'm trying to be there to give back, give advice, give whatever wisdom he collected. And he said, yes, well, you know, I was curious. And he even said something that was so humble. He said, you know, we were lucky. Like, referring to my festival as if he saw the potential, but he recognized how lucky they were also with their festival and how it bloomed. And I was like, that is so humble of him to say that. He could have just said, wow, well, we're so great, we made it so big, you know, but he just said, you know, we were really lucky. Yeah. And I find that those people that have made so much, like done so much, they don't need to gloat about it. They're just grateful. And, you know, talk about gratefulness. Tomorrow's U.S. Thanksgiving. It's my first time being here actually celebrating it. And there's a lot of meaning here that I don't feel like had in Quebec. I don't think it has the same meaning, or at least in my upbringing, it didn't really feel like I celebrated that so much. But being grateful is a huge thing, at least here in the States, or where, you know, around my friends anyways. Like, there's so much to be grateful about, and let's not forget that. And for him to say that, I was like, wow, okay. Like, anyway, so yeah, I feel like we need to have these kind of mentors, which are just people that can be there, that can just come up and validate the efforts that we do as we grow in our careers, do things. Without these people, and still here in LA, the most significant people are the people that saw me come in, saw my dream, saw my, you know, my drive to make it happen, my innocence, my total, you know, just, hey, I want to be part of the party. I think maybe I have something to bring, maybe, if you want to listen, but, you know, you're up to the acceptance of the people that are there to welcome you or send you back home. And I feel like people have been very welcoming. Yeah. And it's really great. I've been feeling it, especially in the last 2 years. You know, COVID was hard, obviously. I came here, you know, I started making plans to expand my career in LA at the end of 2015. And I came back and forth trying to push more, because I was aware that in Montreal, with the industry we have, there was no room for me really to do what I wanted to do. Like, there was not enough project. And we're not going to hide the fact that as a woman in the industry, especially composer, it's super hard. It's, you know, it's very hard. And it's not that people don't want to open doors. There's this unconscious thing about not seeing women as composers. These unconscious beliefs and habits. That's mainly what it is. That's what I believe. I don't think most people mean to just reject diversity. It's more about habits and the easy thing that is available, that they have confidence in because they've been working with them before, or because it just fits a certain format, and because they probably don't have time to search beyond that in the schedule. So it's a bunch of factors. But the fact that in Los Angeles, there's so many opportunities. And I think because there's a bigger pool, there's more action being done to actively push diversity and inclusion, in so many ways because they probably have more opportunities to do so. So I felt like this was the right way to go about it and keep my foot in, you know, one foot in Montreal and just going back as much as I could. And so it kind of grew naturally. COVID was a major block for most people and, you know, me included. So I had just been on a streak of 5 Hallmark movies and it was great because I was okay getting the hang of it. And then COVID hit and that all stopped, you know? So I feel like that was a major curveball and it forced me to again reinvent myself and my yes. career after because, well, first of all, because the contact changed, the people that were hiring me left, they didn't have those positions. So a lot of times you're just attached to whoever hires you, right. you know, the executives, whatever, whoever. So, now it just felt like, okay, well, I guess that was one chapter. Now what's next, you right. know? Right. And I'm in that period right now. I feel like, okay, I'm rediscovering what I can do. Now I have, you know, offers for, solo albums and other projects coming my way. And of course these awards help validate and,
yes. So I want to talk about these awards. Hey, when did you first get nominated? And your name was there, like Nathalie Bonnet is attached to this.
well, I think that actually the first, very first nomination was something about a 24-hour film contest that we did. And we sent it in and we got the Public Choice Award and the Best Sound Design, which I was part of. So that was in 2014. I mean, it's a smaller prize, but it was the first U.S. attached yeah. prize, I would say, as a composer. But my first major nomination was through the Women Warriors, the Voices of Change project that ended up winning this year. So I'm a featured Grammys. Violinist and composer at the Grammys.
You
yes,
have to mention yes, that. Nathalie Bonnet, a part of Quebec, was actually there. Congratulations. Yeah. You had a dream and they saw your dream and you were seeing, they saw my innocence. I just wanted to work. And as a female composer, you made it there. Like, hello. I was so proud because I'm like, wow, that's a dream. She actually made it there because all of us have a dream, right? Are we all going to see that dream come to life? And just standing on that stage, I want to know how it felt.
It was unbelievable. I remember I was filming, you know, the screen. And when I watched the video after, it just wobbled like crazy because we all started screaming when we saw the name. And just I just pitched my phone and wherever and just ran up the stage with, you know, the others that were there. This project is led, created and conducted by a woman named Amy Anderson, and she brought 8 composers, women composers, for this specific project. And so the documentary soundtrack, which was recorded in Riga, was nominated and eventually won for Best Classical Compendium in 2022. So it was totally a dream come true and definitely a validation of I was right to follow my dream. You know, I was right to go for it. We don't do this for the award, but it is validating because there is so much effort that we have to put in our little room practicing or composing and struggling and saying, you know, the blank page or not being inspired some days and just feeling like, oh, what do I think I'm doing? You know, doubts creeping in and kind of need this kind of validation sometimes to yeah. help and say, well, you know, maybe I'm not doing this for nothing, you know.
No, you're not doing it for nothing, definitely not. And you know, I just met you through social media. We haven't met in real life and I can't wait to meet you here in Montreal. I remember going, I wonder how it feels like, and I was watching it, and you know, and I'm all about energy, and I already felt your really vibrant, amazing energy, because I'm all about energy. I believe, you know, when you believe and you're passionate about something and yeah. the right surrounding, and this is all my belief system. And it's like, you know, when you have good values and you see something bigger for yourself and you go for it, not everybody has the strength to do that, right? Because it is a crazy world. But then again, the universe is so amazing that it connects the dots and it puts you at the right place, at the right path by listening to the messages. And I just wonder how that feels like. Will I have that chance one day? Because I do have dreams of my own and I'm working hard on something very special for the States. And I'm like, that day when it happens, I will understand where you're at. I'm not there yet. But it's just never stop believing in your dream. And if it's meant for you to leave a little bit, you know, of Montreal to go out there and grow as a person, because that's another thing. We can be here and be successful, but how amazing it is when you connect with the world. I'm always about international work. You get to connect with so many people and so many humans that love what they do. And it kind of pushes you. It expands you in different ways, right?
You know, there's things that happen sometimes. Like I was just sitting down before I was going to perform at the HMMA and Diane Warren was there. And, you know, Diane Warren is an icon.
Yeah.
You know, but, and I've been seeing her a few times. You know, she sees so many people. And literally she looked at me and said, hey, I know you. And I was like, okay, that just happened. Okay. Okay. Diane Warren just told me, hey, I know you. Oh, yeah. How are you? And I'm like, okay. You know, it's a family. Like, and she's so sweet. We ended up talking for, you know, another while. And I end up being surrounded by these crazy talented people. And they're just part of a family right now. It's not even like, ooh, you know, star struck or something. No. They're just, they are living their own dream.
You're working at the same level. And this you're speaking about, this happened, what, 2 weeks ago at, because that was a nominee.
This is Island. Yeah, last week, actually, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, can you
the HMMA.
Yes.
So the Hollywood Music and Media Awards basically is an award. Well, there's multiple awards. It's like a ceremony celebrating the music for media in Hollywood. So, you know, for example, this year, Alexandre Desplat was, you know, winning many prizes for Pinocchio. And you have a lot of these composers that score for different movies. So you have score categories, which they celebrate the different composers. And there's also a genre category. So we get like instrumental and rom-coms and different genres. So these are to celebrate more the music that gets licensed on these shows that have not been necessarily scored to picture, but for picture and get licensed. So as we know right now, there's 50% that comes from production music. So it's not scored to picture, but it is licensed. So it's music that is existing already. So I was nominated twice for that award as emerging composer, because I guess I'm still emerging in LA. I mean, you know, that's cool. And for instrumental track, which I ended up winning. So it was so special because the guy who gave me the award, who was presenting this award, Deepak, is a dear friend of mine and singer songwriter and violinist. We ended up performing 10 minutes after that moment on stage, and it was just so amazing, you know.
On social media. So Nathalie Bonnet, just go on her page, scroll down, you will see everything, and you'll see her style. I just love it. It's like I call you a dancer, a violinist, because it's like you just bring that whole attitude that comes with the stage. And it's just, we feel it. And me being a dancer, I look at that going, wow, she's crazy. She's wild. She's great. I love it, you know, because it's your unique touch. It belongs to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the stage. So it's something that some people told me at some point, said, you know, you're going to have to choose. You can't be just, you know, both composer and perform. Like, yeah, I'll be both. Sorry.
Yes. Good for you.
I'm not buying that.
No, you do both and you do more than both. Well, just speak to us about what you composed or orchestrated in the last few years.
So in Quebec, before, you know, I started expanding here, I did, well, like I said, Pierre de ne pas envoyer de fleurs. I did also Ça vaut le coup, the theme for the consumer show for a few years, the first two seasons, I think. And then I did the Mesmer. I had music with Mesmer. So the Hip Gags. Hip Gags was actually my first major TV series gig where I was responsible for the full soundtrack. It was huge because there was no words to this, really, like barely any dialogue. So a lot of music to write for two seasons. And some music for the first his first touring. And then here in the States, I did a bunch of short films and I did 5 Hallmark movies. So it's a lot of movies. But, you know, rom-com and Christmas was intense for a year and a half.
For sure.
And the deadlines were crazy. You know, we get like 2-3 weeks maximum to compose and produce this whole soundtrack. It's between 30 and 40 minutes of music. The worst I've gotten is actually 10 days, which was insane. Yeah, I know. I did not sleep. It was not healthy, but that's the deadline I got. Not to recommend it, but
I can't even imagine that. Yeah. Oh boy, that's a lot.
The last one was really nice because it's called Christmas in Vienna, and it was with Sarah Drew, who and Brennan Elliott as well. So Sarah played in Grey's Anatomy, and she was playing the role of a virtuoso violinist that was debating if she was thinking of, you know, making a career stop and just dropping the violin and music. She didn't feel the love for it, blah, blah, blah. But the point is, I had to coach her, the actor, to mimic playing and also compose variations of Christmas songs in a more virtuoso way, which is fun. So I did my own take on Paganini-esque Joy to the World. You know, I had fun doing it. I was like, okay, which song can I take to kind of turn it into Paganini? And not all the hymns or, you know, Christmas songs are made to be, you know, like Jingle Bells is kind of hard to make a virtuoso, but, you know, Handel did Joy to the World. So it was a very good structure for me to build on it. So it was fun. Recently, I guess the most placements I've gotten is through production music, and the album that was actually nominated and won a bunch of awards recently got placed on Bridgerton. So that was probably my best placement ever, because I, and again, we're talking about believing your dreams. This is a vision I had. And that story is, I could write a book about just that placement, because a year and a half ago, I saw the first episode of Bridgerton and I was like, oh, this is so cool. I mean, what a great series. Not only the concept of reinventing that period of time with, you know, diversity, and it was just so well done. And the music was very classical, you know, bunch of string quartets or a small ensemble and classical. And I was like, I would have really loved doing that score. You know, I love the score that, you know, was there already, but I was feeling compelled to contribute something to it, which was kind of surreal. When I had that moment, I was on the couch in Montreal at my dad's place looking at this. I'm like, how can I get music on this show?
Wow.
And so I remembered tracks that were there sitting on a shelf. And I was like, I need to get those back, because I know a lot of them could fit this show. So I went through them, found them, pitched them to the label, said, I want to pitch to Bridgerton. Like, that was it. I want to pitch to Bridgerton. Like, let's go. I knew they were distributed through APM. I knew APM had already placements on the show. So I knew they have a foot in the door. So let's figure out how to do this. Empath, the label, was as passionate as I was. She's, you know, the owner, Mirette, started watching the show, started thinking, okay, how can we pitch this? Who do we find? And she helped find the right people at APM to connect with the supervisors and everything. And we ended up putting a full album together, pitching it to them, and then, you know, waiting, basically.
Yes.
And after some point, I was like, okay, well, we tried, you know, it was February, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to watch the show for fun. I know there's going to be 2 more seasons. We'll see. And as I was watching the final show, and I ended up hearing my track at midnight, not even knowing, you know, out of the blue, it was just like, what?
But are they allowed to do that? Wait a second.
Well, they are, but, you know, it's on the cue sheet. Everything's cool. Like, we'll get paid. It's all good. It's just that nobody thought of telling us. The label didn't know. They just negotiated with, you know, distributor and distribution, and, you know, things go really fast in those
series.
So sometimes they choose a music on the fly. I don't know what happened when they decided, but I found out at midnight watching the show, and I was such in disbelief, thinking I must be dreaming this, that I went back to listen to my album a few times to make sure it was my
track. Oh my God. Oh my God. Imagine not knowing, and you're watching it, and then right away it's like, by the way, you're on it now. And I'm like, what? No one told me. No one, like,
yeah. And it was a big scene. Like, it was one of those big ballroom scene where they actually choreographed, like, all the major actors of this series is on that scene dancing. And you see the musicians performing, because of course they asked me before in case to do the sheet music, because they sometimes have to pretend playing. So it actually worked out. So my dream on my couch at my dad's place, on my dad's couch, actually came true, you know. So
wow.
We do have to believe in those dreams, because when they're that strong, I mean, they can happen.
God, this is a title of our episode. Dreams do come true. You know
what? They do. They actually do.
They really, yeah. Well, for you, many, many times again, over and over, because you learned the secret, but because you manifested, you watched, then it's like, how do I get there? You do the work and it gets there. In a way, it's fun because it was a surprise for you. Like, I could just imagine you're hearing it. Then you go back to listen to make sure. I get the paperwork is getting done and you're going to get paid and all that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Just in that moment of not knowing, and then your dream just exists. I think that's really special. I like that. I really like that.
I became a 5-year-old at that point. I was literally jumping on my bed, poor bed. But, you know, I was like, I was screaming. I was a 5-year-old. It was just pure joy.
So I guess that's the moment that you said, wow, I manifested something on my father's couch that one night. And then look at me, you know, and that happened in a span of.
It was over a year.
Yeah. Oh, it was over a year. OK, well, still.
You know, it took that time. But, you know, it just have to be patient, believe it. And of course, I did a bunch of other things, but I kept on to that dream and just moving forward with it. This same album got nominated and won a Mark Award, actually. About a month and a half ago, I would say. So the Mark Awards honor the production music side of things. So there were actually two tracks that were nominated. One was this track for best placement on a TV drama series. So I was really happy about that, for the placement of Arrival of the Princess on Bridgerton. And the other one was for the trailer. So it was Euphoria. So that one for classical track.
This is like, it's honors after honors after honors. It's like, Natalie, what is it that you still dream about? Like, how many more movies or stuff that you want to do or envision doing?
I'm on the next phase right now. I'm looking into immersive and AR, VR, and, you know, a kind of new entertainment, Web3 entertainment. So I'm working on that. I'm working on a couple of pretty big projects, combining music and a bunch of different arts with, you know, projections, domes, AR, VR. And I think this is a lot of where we're going towards, is this new way of experiencing art and music. So very curious about it.
Do you want to ever compose for a Broadway musical?
I would love to. I mean, it's something I haven't done, so why not? You know, that'd be great.
Let's add that in the plate.
You know.
Why not? You must be proud to know, as a violinist, musician, and, you know, strings, that is in demand, because sometimes you never know, you know, there's things that, it's not in demand that much, but obviously you have to open the doors to the States in order to get all these opportunities.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool that this line of work is in demand and that you do a lot of great stuff.
I think that the trick is not to get stuck in one direction and be open to go with the flow or go with where it's going, you know, looking backwards or trying to get back something that, you know, for example, the jobs that I had before COVID. Well, maybe I'll get something similar in the future, but I can't just look back and try to get what I had before. People, life, everything moves on. And now the next big projects, it seems, in front of me are different. They're just shaped differently. They're more personal albums, they're more innovative technological projects, and I need to go towards that, because that's the calling now. It changes sometimes every day. You just have to focus on one direction, but then be willing to go with the wind a little, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And being flexible, expanding in different ways, being stretched. That's what it is. Being stretched in different ways. You perform with so many big artists. Which ones are your fondest memories?
Charles Aznavour was very special.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was very special. We played in New York. It's right behind Carnegie Hall. I think it's New York City Center or something like that. And it was very special to perform with him during, you know, some of his last years of touring. And also to see the crowd. I mean, Bono was there. You know, there was like major artists that came to see this. It's like, it's just like an amazing vibe in the room. Yeah. My other high moment, I would say, it's Stevie Wonder at the Bell Center. I can't describe it. It's like playing with a legend like that. You're like, what is going on?
So you're on stage with him, like literally playing.
I was 10 feet away from him. I was like, you know, I was on the first stand on the violin. So I was right in front and he was just playing his keyboard like 10 feet away. So
it was
really special. And he was so generous. You know, he came to talk to us. Of course, he couldn't see anybody, but he was just so kind, and he was generous as well to the public. He gave like a 4 hours concert.
Wow.
You know, it's not even, some people even complain. I'm like, dude, if you want to leave, you can leave, but you know, he's giving you 4 hours.
Hello, take it. That's pretty awesome. There's Luciano Pavarotti.
Yeah, that was another one. There's very, you know, these are like legends. So
I know. And you know what? I'll have all this on the post because there's too many to name, but all these experiences are, wow, you've done a lot. And you landed in the most beautiful, prestigious theaters with the most, you know, the legendaries. And I think your career speaks for itself. And you, my dear, your work ethic is pretty phenomenal. Does your son also play music?
He's got so much talent. He's a good pianist. He kind of plays by ear mostly, but he's a composer at heart. He would sit at the piano and just improvise for hours. He's just that kind of talent. And what I like about the fact that I followed my dream is that it actually helped him follow his. Sometimes it, as a mother, you can feel that guilt of maybe if I follow my dream, I'm taking time or, you know, things away from what I can give to my kids. But the fact that I followed my dream, and yes, there were sometimes I couldn't be with him all the time. I was on tour, but anytime I could bring him on stage or bring him around or just making him part of my life, my career, he grew up going on different stages and, you know, meeting the artists, and it became natural for him to do that. And when I followed my dream to come to LA, I said, you know, this is my dream, but it opens a door for you. If you want to have access to the States, I can do that for you because I have the dual citizenship. And so he ended up getting his green card this year.
Aww.
And is now living his dream here, following his dream as a filmmaker.
That's
yeah,
amazing.
He's an actor, and he also wants to study screenwriting, and he's a bit smarter though in a way that, so now he's doing business classes and doing smart business, just learning the skills of that. Thank to help him grow, and I think that's very smart. I wish I would have done that earlier, but yeah, so I'm just happy that that all worked out for him.
Thank you for saying that, because in many of my podcasts we speak about working smart. Because that's one part that people forget. You see, you even said it. I wish I had that back then. Anybody that's starting in this, learn how to do that business side of anything you do, because it's going to help you enormously. And that's one step that people leave behind. I'm an artist.
Yeah.
Where to go? Like, I mean, you have to have the business side. You have to know it. You must be a proud mama.
I am. I am. I keep telling you, you know, you're way smarter. I learned about business in my, you know, when I started doing the festival, 28, I was like, okay, I think I need to learn about business. Getting sponsors and getting, I mean, I didn't know what to do.
Right.
Doing playing music and getting gigs and getting paid. And that's it. I didn't have a business plan for that. My first business plan was because of that festival. But that, you know, that was later, and it wasn't about me. It was about the festival. So I think it's really smart to think about that way ahead.
It's so funny because my son is 16 and he's a piano player. He loves to sing. He's a triple threat. And I looked at him and I'm like, of all the skill sets, I can't help you in music. I don't know music. And like, and it's great because we have a lot of beautiful artists here in Quebec that are my friends and that they are mentoring him. And I'm grateful for that. But I do see that he wants to do more, and I don't know how to help him in doing more because I feel that energy. You know, when you feel that energy, I'm sure and that's an energy that it's more than just passion. It's like, I know you're meant to do this. And I'm like, what do I do? So how do I nurture this? Because I wouldn't know how to nurture the dancing part, the singing, you know, the acting, which he does that very well too. The music side, it's like, wow, do I send him off? And, you know, I interviewed Travis Cormier last week where he went to LA to the Music Institute. I can't remember the school name, but he went there, and thanks to that place, it opened new doors for him too. Mm-hmm. So there are all these opportunities that when someone has a dream is to let them know about it. So I think you having all that created this next step, the next generation of people that can do it. And now, what would you tell the next generation here in Montreal that do have a dream, but that don't have the connections and that don't have a mom like you? Speaking about musicians here, the young generation of music people here, what would you tell them?
You have to prepare for luck. So do the best. Yeah, well, you have to prepare for it. Luck comes to the prepared. So first of all, you have to do the work and be diligent, be passionate, a little baby step at a time. Do at least a few steps towards your dream every day. Just consistency is the most important thing. You know, working one day a week on your dream is not the way to go. You have to work every day a tiny bit. Aside from that, I would say two things. First of all, there's that little phrase I love from Steven Spielberg, who says, listen to the whispers. For me, that was huge because that's how I came to be in LA. I was on that beach. There was nothing that really was logical about it. And I just heard it. It was like, this is where you got to come to, you know, this is where you're going to be. And I was like, what, you know, what's going on? Like, why? But it was so clear. For some reason, I knew somewhere that this is where my career could, you know, move forward. And so listening to those gut feelings is so important. And there's another sentence that I read in a book. I think it's Cameron's book, The Artist's Way or something like that. And it says, jump and the net will appear.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You know, and the hardest thing is jumping, but every single time. And I will, again, you know, I got this opportunity last week. I got called to perform at the HMMA 30 hours before the show on a song I had never heard. I got the song a few hours before the show. And I was tempted to say, wait, I don't want to look like a fool on stage. Like, maybe that's not such a good idea. Like, you know, I'm brave, but this is a little beyond. And I was nominated and I was, this is a lot. My week was like, and I was, then I sat down and said, you know what? Jump. Just jump. And because I did, I think that evening, yes, the award was important, but I think my performance was maybe more important because people got to see me on stage. And that's something that in LA, I still haven't had that opportunity so many times or that many times to do that. So people know me more as a recording artist or composer, but now seeing my energy on stage was something new. And if I didn't dare jump, I would have missed that, you know. And a few people came after and connected me. And one of them wants to, you know, connect me with the guy who played with Pink Floyd. And he's like, you know, you got to play with these guys. I'm like, that's just because I decided to jump.
Amazing.
You know, have faith and do it.
Have faith. Let's do it. So all you young musicians out there listening in, and please listen, because now they can't listen to all the details. There's too much information coming to them. And I wish they could just focus, listen to the whispers, jump, and do it consistently every day. If this is something you want to do it every day. And then magic does happen. And then you live from what you love to do every day, every moment.
Yep.
There's going to be these great opportunities in 10 days. Like this crazy wild adventures that you have to
do. It will be a roller coaster, that's for sure. It's not always up, but you know, it's a wild ride.
What would you add to everything you shared with us?
Just be grateful. Be grateful. and show your gratefulness to people that help you, because that goes a long way.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much for being our
guest.
Thank you. We talk. I'm so happy that I got to meet you on Zoom.
I know. Got to meet in Montreal next time, or in LA if you come. Hey.
I am. I'm supposed to be there in February. So hopefully I do see you there and maybe on the same project one day, because I'm going to keep you in mind, because that's what it is. Montreal together. Let's get it together. and let's manifest more great work. Having said all that, I'm wishing you all the best for all your future projects. I know you're going to be shining your way through all of them, because you're
thank you.
Really great. And thank you for this time.
Thank you.